letters keep coming and going while they are, you quotation, separated, while they're working in different areas. And Ellen's giving James advice, wifely advice. You know, you need to take care of your health. You need to be doing this. Are you eating right? Are you getting enough sleep, et cetera, et cetera. It drives James crazy. And he says, he writes back and he says, I have a good head on my shoulders and I plan on using it. I don't need your advice all the time. But then he, after, you know, really laying this out, he says something very telling. He says, I don't want to hear anything more about, you know, you telling me how to run my life. Unless you have a revelation from God, then please don't withhold it. I want to know.
The Lineage Journey Podcast. Unscripted conversations that aim to help you on the journey of discovering your lineage. Join us as we take a deeper look into past lineage episodes and see the lessons we can learn for today.
I'd like to welcome you all to the Lineage Journey Podcast. We've been going on our journey through Christian history, through the Reformation, also through episodes of Adventist history as well. Today we have a guest with us that comes all the way from Washington, D.C., or Maryland, sorry, area. We have Chantel Klingbeil. She is the Associate Director of the White Estate, situated at the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You did help us a lot with our Lineage Journey Season 2, with information as to what we could record and just stories to cover and things like that. So really appreciate your input in Lineage and helping us out with our Season 2 in the past. And we're glad that you're with us here to record with us at the Called Convention here in Kentucky. So is there anything else about your bio or yourself you'd like to share? Your background a little bit, maybe?
Well, you probably pick up on the accent. That's probably the first thing.
Okay.
It's a South African accent.
Uh-huh.
Although my relatives in South Africa tell me I'm losing it, but apparently it's still there.
Yes,
South African born, okay. But I've lived in South America and in the U.S. now, okay, too.
All right. Well, we're glad you're here with us. So the subject we're going to cover today is actually one of our highest viewed lineage episodes.
Hmm.
And it's the subject of James and Ellen White's marriage. I think it was yourself who suggested we do that episode, if I'm correct, because it wasn't really on our radar. And I'm glad that we did, because like you say, it seems to strike a nerve with the people who watch and with the audience out there. So let's go right back to the beginning with this. They get married, I think it's in the 1840s, mm-hmm, somewhere. So how did they meet? How did they get married and in the first place? And I think they were both relatively young, if I'm correct.
Yes, they were, at least by our standards.
Mm-hmm.
By their standards, it wasn't too young.
It was
young.
Just normal. Yeah.
Yeah. Ellen was married. Well, James and Ellen were married in 1846, in August of 1846.
Okay.
So that would make her, let's see, she was 17 in 44. So she was
19,
which was a good ripe age for those times. Mm-hmm. Remember, right after basic schooling for women, it was marriage or very few could go on into careers. There were very, very few careers. So how did they meet? Well, they met around ministry.
Okay.
James was a Millerite preacher. Mm-hmm. A very dynamic man. I think there's an interesting personality blend that you have there, because James was really a type A personality. He was really on fire. He had so much energy. He was quite a bit taller than Ellen. Ellen was a bit shorter than him. And she was very shy and retiring. And he was, you know, out there, really dynamic. So apparently he noticed her before she noticed him.
Okay.
So she had already, what he had seen at one of his meetings, this shy, quiet girl who had the special gift. And he was intrigued by this and he took note of this.
So he knows that she's a prophet already?
Yes.
Gift of prophecy, right?
Yes, that she has the gift of prophecy. And he offers, it's kind of an interesting story that when you would think that as a girl, that having the gift of prophecy would probably not be a big asset to your popularity levels. Mm-hmm. And in many ways it wasn't, but there were several young men and older men that suddenly decided that they needed to help and assist her in her ministry at the time.
Interesting.
And there was one young man, apparently, who saw potential for getting fame and influence through her. And she was actually warned in a dream that that man was not to be trusted. And she was also told that she could trust James. So that was something going for James, a recommendation. But not for marriage. Both of them had no marriage plans on
just
mind.
To do ministry together.
Together. And they were very careful.
How old was he at the time? So she's 19. Yes. She's 17, 18.
Yeah, he was under correction, but I think he was about 5-6 years older.
Okay, so
than
he's
her.
Around 25 or so, 24, 5.
I was thinking 23. I'd have to check his age again.
Yeah.
But there was an age difference. Well, a big one, but he was definitely older than her. But remember, a young woman never traveled without a chaperone.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't done. It just put a whole smear on the whole enterprise of whatever you were doing.
Mm.
So she needed to have a chaperone. She always went with a sister, her sister or another female.
Okay.
But they
needed a man to travel.
You needed a man because it's practical to drive the buggy, to harness and unharness, etc. It was practical. So they drove around a lot together. And despite being very careful to always have a chaperone with them, rumors started spreading. And it reached her mom. Her mom was really upset and said, "Ellen, you've got to come home. I know there's nothing going on, but this is terrible for the whole family. This is a real problem." By then, James felt really strongly that he wanted to help her, protect her. And so both of them then started thinking about marriage. So it wasn't really romance first. Mm-hmm.
It was
sort of practical.
Okay.
But I think there must have been a little something there.
Sure, sure.
Especially from James's side. So they started thinking about it. James had a lot to swallow because he had written an article in the church paper just a year before, condemning out loud an Advent couple. I mean, I can't call them, well, Adventist, because there's no formal church, but a young couple that got married. And he said, "How can you be thinking of marriage when we're living in end times? This is denouncing your faith by this act."
Sure.
So he had to eat his words pretty soon after.
There's probably a few people listening that can resonate with that as well. I'm not going to get married. And then
then it turns out that it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. And it certainly was for both of them.
Okay. So they get married in the 1846. The church hasn't formed yet. It's just a fledgling movement. In many ways, going through a lot of splits or division and formation and all the rest. So they're living, if I'm correct, in New England. What would have early married life have been like? There's not a church for them to work for, but they're still trying to get something going. What did work look like? What did marriage look like? What was life like? I mean, it was
tough. If I could summarize it, tough. Right from the beginning. I mean, they get married before a commission of oaths because there's no church to get married in. I mean, they've been thrown out of their churches.
Yeah.
So that kind of sets a precedent for what's happening. They live for a little while with Ellen's parents.
Okay.
But there seems to be some tension when James and Ellen accept the Sabbath.
Okay.
When they start studying the tract, when they accept the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be some issues there. They don't have a place of their own. They don't have furniture. They haven't set up house. So they end up moving in with some friends. It's tough. It's tough going. Financially, James is working to try to get something
What kind
started.
Of work does he do?
Anything and everything that he can get his hands on. He's doing hay harvesting. Mm-hmm. He's laying railway
track or wood,
what do you call them? The wooden parts.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard, heavy physical work. Sometime in here, he also has a leg injury and that slows things down. But he's out there. He's working. You think the bulk, they work really hard. Mm-hmm. This is a New England mentality. They're not afraid of work. Mm-hmm. They're working hard. But the money that they're getting, very little is going towards building up a home or living for mm-hmm. them. It's going into travel. There's little companies all over that have heard that Ellen has messages mm-hmm. of encouragement.
And they wanted to speak.
And so they invite, but they don't pay. So Ellen and James have to pay their own way to go to these different places. I find it really touching. I mean, a year later, they have their first child. And she writes about having to choose between saving on having milk for herself to drink, because, you know, she's breastfeeding, on having some milk. Mm-hmm. So that she can give the baby good nutrition, or if she has to wait and with that money buy a piece of cloth to make a little jacket for the baby.
Wow.
That's how tight money is at the time, because it's going into ministry.
So today we would probably call them self-supporting.
Oh, yeah. They were 100%. But so was everyone.
They were all doing that because
there was no organized
offering
structure.
System or whatever. So they're working full-time, living on a portion of their income, but putting as much as they can into the work to get
things going.
But I guess they didn't really have a vision. We're going to start an organization. They just getting people ready for Jesus' return.
Getting people ready for Jesus' return and following the invitations where they come, trying to strengthen. And sometimes in vision, she's actually, you know, given messages for certain companies or certain people. And that's what they then do. Yeah.
They're living still right now Portland, Topsom area, Brunswick.
Well, they keep moving around. They're with friends. Yeah, they're still up there in the New England area.
So some of the challenges they faced, I mean, you've mentioned a few of them, would have been just hard work and tough work. As it relates to their marriage, did they have any challenges early on just...
off the bat?
Yeah.
I'm guessing that getting married and beginning with nothing would be kind of challenging.
Yeah.
We don't hear much about it because, as I say, I mentioned this couple of diary entries here and there, a couple of letters. But I think it's high stress. It's high stress. Traveling is stressful. You know, pregnancy and childbirth is stressful
How soon after marriage did they have kids, roughly?
The next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because, you know, there isn't birth control either. And so it's stressful and it changes the dynamic of the family. Now they're not only responsible for themselves as a couple, they've got little Henry and, they've got to provide for him as well while continuing their ministry.
So how do they handle, I mean, the question a lot of pastors will have today is ministry and family. How do they handle their traveling itinerant schedule with having a young child? Do they take him with them, leave him behind, or, you know, what did I do? Leave him with the parents?
They left him with friends.
Okay.
For the most part, especially during the winter months when they could travel best.
Mm-hmm.
That happened best during winter. Summer, you worked and earned money more, and the long, cold winters were time for traveling and preaching assignments. You couldn't take a tiny tot with you on a sleigh. For hours in below freezing. So this was for Ellen the toughest thing. When Henry was born, she took it as an excuse to get out of her ministry.
Oh,
she actually said, I'm so happy now I can try and make my little nest and not my ministry. And Henry actually got sick and then she got a fright. And she said, well, I don't want to. God has given me this ministry. I must be selfish and just think of myself.
Wow. That kind of gives you an indication of what her maybe deep motherly desire was.
Oh, yeah. You don't think of Ellen as a mother, but when you read, you know, how it tears her heart when she leaves her little one behind. It just completely breaks her heart, and that somebody else is seeing all that growth and teaching them, teaching him his first words. It's a very godly couple. They're very happy with the family they're leaving him with, but it breaks her heart. I remember once she writes of in one particular place where a sister, in the faith, was sitting with her in the kitchen. And she said to her, to Ellen, "Oh, what a nice life you must have, traveling around, giving talks, being entertained in other people's houses instead of the drudgery of housework and mothering. Mm. What a privileged life." And for Ellen, it was sort of a slap in the face.
Mm.
And she remembers just looking at the woman and thinking, if only you knew, that is where I want to be, not here. You know, so there's a lot to swallow and keep going. I think this was a hard balance for her. It wasn't ideal. It wasn't perfect. And I think she regretted some of that afterwards, that she couldn't, that they couldn't have had it, made another plan. But yeah, that's the way they did it.
That's fascinating. That really is. I never kind of knew that insight, that she thought having kids was kind of an exit from public ministry, and then she kind of had to keep going. So what, how did James handle, you've already mentioned that he marries her when she's already got the prophetic gift. How does he handle being married to a prophet? Like, obviously he was okay with it because he married her, but were there any ups and downs, or was it just smooth sailing? Like, I'm married to a prophet.
I don't think it was smooth sailing. I think we missed some of the dynamics. Yes, I think he was intrigued. He wanted to protect her and help her.
Mm-hmm.
He also really valued her judgments and especially the guidance that came through her visions for God's work. So having a job outside of the home was something unknown. Having a woman that spoke in public was also something strange. People often used to, when she started speaking at an appointment, they would often pass up a little paper with the Bible text, a woman should not teach a man, you know, the New Testament quote. And then James or one of the other men would get up and explain that quote before she got to speak.
Hmm.
So it was sort of countercultural. A man was definitely the head of his house. And household.
Yeah, yeah.
And having a woman that drew so much attention was tough for James at times.
Mm.
And there were occasions where he swallowed hard. And it must have been quite a thing for his ego as well.
Yeah.
On occasions, they would speak together. Mm-hmm. They normally had their ministry together. But there are a few occasions where he would preach in one location and she would preach in another, like at a camp meeting or something. And then everyone would turn over to Ellen's meetings to hear Ellen speak. And James was left with almost no audience.
Oh, wow.
And so
that's
that
tough.
Must have been
when
tough
you're a seminar
on him.
Speaker at an event. Or...
That must have been tough.
Yeah, wow. So it's almost a constant, not battle or struggle, it's a constant challenge.
Yeah, a constant readjustment that had to take place.
Mm-hmm.
As Ellen's popularity or ministry spread, it was for James as well. He had to keep readjusting, and they had to keep finding their roles. Ellen grew more, she grew as a person, and she matured, and she became more secure in herself and in her ministry, which required adjustments on James' part. Later on, when James was sick, when he had his strokes, etc., again, the roles changed, and Ellen became the nurse and the protector and the motivator. And all of that requires adjusting.
Yeah. So we've looked at how they got together. We've looked at early married life. We looked at some of the challenges, how James handles being married to a prophet. And maybe we've covered this question already as well. How was traveling as a ministry couple blending with family life handled? I guess we kind of looked at that. They kind of left the kids behind. Mm-hmm. What about when the kids got older, though? Did they ever like start traveling with them, or was it just kind of a standard thing that they left the kids with friends as they traveled?
They left Henry, and by the time when Edson, they left as well, quite a bit. But then things started to settle down. By the time in the 50s, by the time they moved to Battle Creek, they got their first house. And they brought their boys, and by then Willie was also born.
Okay.
And they had then, she had more help. The church was starting to form.
Mm-hmm.
Things were more organized, and they could finally have a home life. as well. And James was involved in publication. We have the printing press, the Review and Herald beginning. So it's more regular hours.
Okay.
And so we have the beginnings. And I think that made things easier.
So like when the organization starts and they start working for the church, it was slightly easier maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
Organization makes everything easier.
It does.
Down to home life, I'd say.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to take a short break here. We're going to look at a little bit more about how many kids they had, how Ellen White dealt with some of the challenge she had as her kids reached their adolescence or their teenage years, and then maybe delve into a little bit about, I think maybe they may have separated for a while, I don't know, or live separately. That's something that I've heard, so we'll kind of throw that out there and see if that's true. But really appreciate you sharing with us this first half of the podcast. Do stick with us. We're just going to take a short break and come back in just a moment to finish off our subject on Ellen and James White's marriage.
Lineage is a non-profit organization kept running by generous donors like you. Support us today on patreon.com/lineagejourney.
History shapes identity. Identity shapes mission. And a clear mission determines the trajectory of your future. Knowing where you come from is key to understanding your present purpose and your future mission. Lineage Journey is a series of videos that will take you on a journey through time, discovering the key people and events that have shaped the Christian faith. From the Waldenses to Martin Luther to Zwingli, from England to France, Switzerland to Germany, the light broke over the horizon of Europe, piercing through the Dark Ages, and then spread out over the world. As the United States of America rose to supremacy, Christianity formed the bedrock of this great nation. And so from the Great Awakening to the Great Disappointment and beyond, Lineage follows the journey of God's church throughout time, immersing you in the places, the stories, and the people through whom Christianity has shone the brightest. Join us on a journey through time. Follow us on social media at Lineage Journey or check out our website at lineagejourney.com. Lineage Journey not only produces video content, but instructive and illuminating resources to teach young and old about Christian history. Lineage has produced an educational coloring book for people of all ages. It includes original artwork from Ashley Bloom, highlighting the various heroes of the Reformation. Each scene has a matching story, and there are also QR codes to connect you to the website for more information and to watch the videos. There are also fun facts and memorable quotes to accompany the scenes to color in. Designed for young and old alike, get your copy now at lineagejourney.com.
We'd like to welcome you back to our Lineage Journey podcast here with Chantel Klingbeil. We're going into the subject of James and Ellen White's marriage. So we've looked at kind of the early part of their marriage and ministry starting as a couple. Let's go back to the kids. You've mentioned a couple of the kids already, but how many children did James and Ellen White have?
They had four boys.
Okay.
They had Henry and then Edson, James Edson, actually, but just Edson. And then they had William or Willie. And then they had little John Herbert.
Okay.
And we don't know much about John Herbert because he died at 12 weeks of age. So he was just a little guy. We don't have any photographs of him either. So he died in 1860. And 3 years later, that was a really devastating blow for the family. I mean, this one was tough. Mm-hmm. Losing a three-month-old baby is tough. Ellen writes about, you know, how her heart broke as she followed the little casket. It's very touching, actually. And then we have Henry getting sick, the 16-year-old Henry getting sick. And he gets a pneumonia very quickly, and he dies. He's with visiting friends at the time, but his parents managed to get to him, and he dies in James's arms.
Wow.
It's pretty dramatic. It's also kind of, I find it very touching when Henry knows he's dying, and he dictates a letter that gets read to all his friends in Battle Creek, encouraging them to give their hearts to Jesus. He acknowledges that, you know, he hasn't always been the best influence. Apparently, Henry was a very friendly kind of a guy. He enjoyed fun. He enjoyed music. He enjoyed being with his friends. And he sometimes wasn't as good an influence as he should have been. And so he writes to his friends and, you know, sort of, I think it's pretty dramatic when your 16-year-old friend says, you know, when you're in my position, think about what really counts and wow. live your life this way. But what I find really touching is he says to his mom and dad, he says, I'm dying. I'm ready. I know I'll get to see Jesus. But I have a request. Bury me, please, next to my little brother.
Oh, wow.
Back at Battle Creek. Because when Jesus comes, my little brother needs to have someone right there to help him.
Wow.
He was obviously thinking mm-hmm. that, you know, Jesus would come before his parents died. And so he wanted to be the good big brother to his little brother.
Oh, wow. That's
as
touching.
Sort of a last wish.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. And then there was the two surviving boys were Edson and Willie.
And Willie. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we actually did a lineage episode on Henry's death. But we also did one on Edson or James Edson.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't always a good boy, to use today's terminology. So he kind of is a little bit wayward. Maybe just share a little bit about that. And
he's a little bit lot wayward.
Okay.
I think he must have been quite the problem child for his parents.
So he's a PK, pastor's kid, preacher's kid.
Preacher's kid.
Prophet's kid.
Okay, we can't really blame him because he was really
living in a
kind of a bubble. But he did make his own choices.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of his father, which probably led to clashes between the two of them as far as temperament is concerned. He was also very interested in the printing business. He looked at good ways of making money.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that James could also do. Mm-hmm. But James would turn that all over to the cause,
mm-hmm.
whereas Edson, you know, didn't have always selfless motivations and his monetary schemes. He at one point Edson discovered that maybe being a white, you know, part of the white family, it could be used to your advantage and became a source of embarrassment for his parents. He would go into a place and make it known who he was, and immediately people would be very impressed, the other Adventist believers, and he would say that he wants to start some or another project and he's looking for investment, and people would invest with mm-hmm. him, and invariably the project would sink and Edson would skip town. And then the Advent folks would write to Ellen and James and say, you know, we'd like our money
bail
back.
Us out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was a plain embarrassment for them.
Wow.
And it led to conflict between Ellen and James because they had differing parenting styles as well, especially with this adult young man. Ellen, believe it or not, was more inclined to say, let's bail him out this time and you know,
think about next time.
Speak to his heart that he doesn't do it again. And James was more of, well, he made his bed, let him sleep in it. So this was, led to tension.
How old is he at this point? He's in his 20s probably?
20s into his 30s.
Oh, really?
He had a big fallout with the Review and Herald Publishing Association about copyrights.
Uh-huh.
And that was really messy. He wanted to sue them.
Wow.
You can imagine how the tabloids picked up on that one, you know. So he was a real embarrassment. Actually, by the time James dies in 1881, they are not reconciled.
Really?
Yeah. So a real problem child in that way.
And so it's not just like teenage rebellion.
No,
it goes into his adult life. He's married by now as well?
He's married.
Okay.
Yeah, he marries against his parents' wishes. He marries young. They don't have anything against his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Emma's she's a wonderful woman. I think she does him good, but they say you're just not mature enough for the responsibilities. And they were probably right about that. Ellen, she spent years and years and years praying for her son. I mean, I think for a lot of parents today that are worried about mm-hmm. their kids, I think Ellen and James would be able to identify with him. He is in his 40s. I believe he's 44 before he's finally converted.
Wow. That's like 20, 30 years of his life.
That's wasted. When he is converted, he applies all that energy. And I know you spoke about the tremendous work he does as a missionary, really, a groundbreaker, pioneer in the work on the Mississippi.
In the South with the Morning Star. Yeah.
But it's a long road to get to that point.
Okay.
Ellen didn't give up. That's probably the good news.
That's the most important thing, that she labors with her child. Mm-hmm. But I find it fascinating they have different strategies of mm-hmm. or different ideas of how to deal with their son.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the father's a bit more hardline. She's a little bit more,
I guess, more motherly.
But she's able to bring him around, or God is able to bring him around through them. So this is like one challenge they obviously have in their marriage. But there's another one, because James doesn't, he gets sick as well,
mm-hmm.
or has a stroke, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm. James actually has several strokes. And some of them take a long time for him to recover from.
Hmm.
At times they think he won't recover, that his health is absolutely broken. And I think doctors are more aware of it today, and they probably warn patients and the family of patients of the stroke. Even if they recover well physically, sometimes a stroke also affects a person's personality.
Yeah.
And this, of course, wasn't known, but mm-hmm. it definitely was the case with James. Mm. He became very, very irritated. Ellen writes at one point that it's very trying. He's still recovering. He wants her with him all the time. He wants her. When she leaves the room, he's like, where is she? Where is she? Mm-hmm. But when she's in the room, the clicking of her knitting needles drives him crazy. She can't do anything. She's got to just sit there. He's suddenly very suspicious. Everybody's plotting against him, and there's all sorts of personality issues that he has, and these swings in mood that they've got to cope with. And Ellen is completely puzzled.
And this is before people know about
mm-hmm.
what you say, like you say, the
reactions,
that these things are reality and how to deal with it and all mm-hmm. that. So she's kind of fighting.
She's
in the dark.
Really puzzled, really, really puzzled. And he'd often take out his frustrations on her as well, mm-hmm. you know, his irritations and that kind of a thing. She confides in her best friend, Lucinda Hall. She says, you know, I love James. I know that I love him, but sometimes I really can't understand him. I don't know why he is behaving like he is behaving.
Mm.
She's completely perplexed. I mean, she pours her heart out. They're facing a real tough time in their marriage. Afterwards, she feels bad about it, and she says to Lucinda, please burn those letters that sent to you. Lucinda didn't.
She doesn't, that's why.
And that's why we got them. I'm kind of glad
that
we've got them. Of course, it does lead to a lot of rumors,
mm.
but I'm glad we've got them.
So the Lucinda letters.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've also heard that there's talk that they separated.
Yeah, I would say maybe that's a little dramatic in our idea.
That's what I heard, but maybe unpack that as to what,
Our idea of separation is you move out and, you know, with the mind to divorce.
Yeah.
I would say they took time out. If you could call it that.
So they didn't separate as we understand it.
No.
Today. Okay.
There were times where they just couldn't get along.
Mm-hmm.
And then they split and went on working. I went on a
work assignment,
camp meeting tour route or whatever else. I find it very interesting that at this time, if anybody, this is just an aside, but if anybody thinks that James was somehow manipulating Ellen into her visions and that the two of them were in some big hoax together. I find this most revealing. This letters keep coming and going while they are, your quotation, separated, while they're working in different areas. And Ellen's giving James advice, wifely advice. You know, you need to take care of your health. You need to be doing this. Are you eating right? Are you getting enough sleep, et cetera, et cetera. It drives James crazy. And he says, he writes back and he says, I have a good head on my shoulders and I plan on using it. I don't need your advice all the time. But then he, after, you know, really laying this out, he says something very telling. He says, I don't want to hear anything more about, you know, you telling me how to run my life. Unless you have a revelation from God, then please don't withhold it. I want to know. I think that's pretty telling that even when you're upset with your wife, you're irritated with your wife, but he could differentiate between Ellen the wife and Ellen the prophet. And he still had respect for Ellen the prophet.
That's a key to their success of their marriage in many ways. Mm-hmm. There may be some tension or whatever, but he always recognizes her prophetic gift and wants to hear it, no matter how hard it may be for him.
I mean, God had some pretty straight testimonies for James that he didn't always manage to follow. He'd try and slip back, especially when it came to his workload and his workaholic nature and not delegating enough, etc. So he got some pointed messages that if he had applied would probably have been more helpful to lengthen his service.
So just to reiterate, they didn't separate as we understand today.
No.
They had maybe some tension or maybe he would go on, like you said, preaching trips. She would stay at home, things like that. But it wasn't like we understand it today. So
yes.
But we do understand they
decided that they couldn't work together as they had in the past.
And it was best
for a time period. That sort of time outs were good. Yeah. They were healing for both of them in view of what James had been through with his strokes.
Sure.
And when he recovered, they would find their sync again and work as a
now, during this team. Time apart, would they write letters to each other?
Oh, yes. What I just spoke about was the letter. The letters came thick and fast. And despite this tension, there's these overtones. There's a deep love that's still there. Ellen is traveling with Willie at one point, and James writes to Willie saying, make sure that your mother is is warm and has a decent winter cloak. Don't let her skimp on it, because she will go for a cheap thing. Don't let her skimp. Make sure that she's warm and that she can stay well. So there's these little tokens of affection still, a deep love and concern for each other, even in these situations still.
Okay. So I want to ask a question that deals with James and Ellen White in particular, because Ellen White wrote Adventist Home. It's used today by a lot of people to talk about how you should have the best home. She wrote Child Guidance. And so she wrote books that people read today and try to emulate. In a sense, the proper way to have a Christian home, the proper way to raise children, the proper way to have a marriage, and all these types of things. And yet, from what we've talked about, it seems that their marriage wasn't perfect, or the kids weren't all great, and they had challenges that we would not think that they had. So how do we reconcile that with the fact that she's a prophet and the words that she wrote were inspired and so on? Like, how do we... I mean, I find it fascinating, and I think it's easy to reconcile in my mind, but not maybe not for everyone who's listening. So,
yeah, I think maybe we have this idea of a sterile kind of clinical prophet or prophecy, as if biblical prophets weren't real people with real issues.
It
doesn't diminish the message. The messenger doesn't diminish the message. These are principles that are there for all times. Some of the advice she gives is hard learned and earned. For instance, when she speaks about the diet of a child and how important it is and how it helps when you are raising your child on good, healthy food, it helps with the child's behavior and sleep and all the rest. I mean, it's pretty logic now, but this wasn't an advice she had at the time when her children were little. They didn't even have the health message at that time. So a lot of the things that she writes about are in retrospect, where she looks back and applies things. Somehow, when she's dealt with these issues herself, I can take her advice somewhat. I take it closer to heart. I find it more encouraging.
Yeah, the point you just mentioned, I think that was fascinating or really enlightening, because like you say, she was raising kids before she, in a sense, had some of the insights that she shares on health and how to raise kids that other people benefit from. So
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's in many cases that she looks back on her experience combined by these biblical principles that are becoming brighter and shining out more clearly as God is revealing more throughout her long ministry.
Hmm.
So it's that combination of personal experiences and more light that she's combining in the counsels that she's giving to individuals and to families, to people.
I think you shared once as well about kind of the challenges they faced in their marriage, or the challenges they faced are similar to challenges people face today that often leads to divorce, but yet they didn't.
Yeah, I find that so fascinating. As I look back, apparently today you can predict whether or not your marriage, or rather say what chances your marriage has of surviving by several factors. And if your marriage faces these certain factors, it counts against your marriage surviving. And the odds become higher and higher of your marriage not surviving. These factors are financial challenges.
Okay, so financial issues.
Ellen and James had that more than once, big financial issues. Death of a child. When you're a child, when you lose a child, you think it would bring you together. But that's one of the big factors in divorce today, because people mourn differently.
And they
pull apart actually through it. And they had two deaths that they faced. The other big issue is change of roles in a marriage, where you have a husband that is suddenly unemployed, or a wife that is employed where a husband used to be employed, or a wife gets a promotion that the husband doesn't get, or a husband gets a promotion and moves in, you know, so those put stresses on a marriage. Ellen and James had that.
A lot.
Yeah. In a way that's unique, I think. Not all of us have the role of prophet. Plus he was General Conference president. At a time, he was definitely a church leader and founder. There was these continual role changes that they faced. And then, of course, sickness. A major sickness is a big stressor on a marriage, especially a life-threatening sickness is a big stressor. And Ellen and James faced a lot of life-threatening sicknesses in their family. And then, of course, we think of James' strokes. Ellen had her share of bad health as well. So that definitely put a stress on the marriage. The only thing that they didn't have is marital unfaithfulness. Those are the things that cause divorce today. And out of the five things, Ellen and James had four in abundance. And yet their marriage survived. And didn't only survive, it thrived. I can't think of another couple that had a blended ministry that contributed so significantly to God's work.
Yeah.
I don't even think of a biblical couple sort of offhand. Yeah. It was really tremendous the way God used them as a couple, not only as individuals.
It's true, because it wasn't just the one of them. Both working together to their strength with tension, but
they worked through
pressing through the obstacles
that they had. And I love the fact that even though she was a prophet, there was no easy way. The same thing as for Ellen and James, when they accepted the Sabbath, it wasn't through Ellen's vision. They had to do it like you and I.
Study the Bible.
They had to study the Bible and come to it. When they faced marital challenges, they didn't get a vision to tell them how to solve it.
They had to just walk
They had
through
to
it.
Pray, work, compromise, say, I'm sorry, try again. They had to do things the way you and I have to do them. The same with their parenting. They didn't get all the answers. They had to wrestle on their knees. They had to cry. They had to say, why? What am I doing wrong? How can I do this better? How can I reach my child? They had to do it the same way we did.
I think that's what we should really take comfort in, because they didn't have the perfect marriage.
No.
They weren't perfect parents. They had huge issues, but they didn't have an advantage in a sense of, you got an issue with your son and God like has a bloodless hand writing on the wall telling them exactly what to do. They've got to kind of work through these things. And I think that's really encouraging, because
the same God that brought them through their challenges can bring us through their challenges, with the added advantage of the counsel that we now have.
It's true.
To help us and make
we
that
have their
process
experience
easier.
Plus their counsel.
Exactly.
So I find that really encouraging. And I think a lot of people are going to find that encouraging who are listening, whether they're parents or not. But if we were to just kind of big picture glance back as we come to a close, what would you say is maybe a favorite story you have from their marriage, that kind of anything that kind of you just like, that particular episode or how they dealt with a certain issue? Or
well, we don't think of it often, but there was humor in their relationship as well. And
I think it would have to be to go through the challenges
that they went through. And I kind of like that. That there were, every now and again, there's these little moments of humor that flashes out, you know. You know, there's the story of she enjoyed really making rag carpets.
Okay.
And the place would be a mess when she was making rag carpets, because there's little bits of rag all over, and then you sew them together and you sew them together, and, you know, it's a big job. And James just didn't appreciate that hobby. He didn't appreciate it much, but he tolerated it because that's something that she really enjoyed doing. But at one point, she was doing her rag carpet thing again, and he came up the walkway to the house singing a hymn that he had adapted. You know, it was a hymn about heaven, and he had adapted the words, and he was singing loud and heartily, "In heaven there'll be no more rag carpets, no more rag carpets." And so Ellen started laughing, and it's funny enough, but it was shortly after that Ellen changed her hobby to knitting.
Oh, really?
And gave up the rag carpets. But there were these, you know, you have these little moments. It wasn't all solemn and serious. I think they had a humor. And you have James saying that Ellen's his crown of rejoicing. And Ellen says he's the best man who ever trod on shoe leather. And these little overtones, these cute little moments also in letters where she speaks about how much she misses him and how cold her bed is when he's not there. And there's a kind of warmth that you can miss. And I like seeing little glimpses of that.
So they kind of had a bit of everything in their marriage in some ways. But I appreciate those stories and sharing the, and we really appreciate you sharing the human side of, and I think that's what a lot of people miss, the human side of love. We don't really see that so much in biblical writers, but with Ellen and James White, because they didn't live so long ago, we do have a lot of records as to how they lived their lives and the challenges that they faced and so on. Oh, you got something else?
I just remembered another really cute story.
Okay, go ahead.
This is when they're older, and both James and Ellen had false teeth at this time. And they were on a tour, and they were visiting. It was cold, cold winter, and they were put in this guest room, and it was so cold, they both had taken their teeth out and put it in glasses of water. And the next morning, apparently, when they wanted to put in their teeth, it was frozen solid. And so there, it's reported that she says, your father and I had a good laugh as we both stood with our glass with our teeth in and couldn't put our teeth in until they defrosted. And so I think it's a super, she writes to her kids about it. The two of them standing there laughing and laughing, toothless and laughing and waiting to defrost their teeth so that they could be presentable and go out in public.
I could just imagine that'd be funny just now. Just dealing with that. So I really appreciate you sharing. the human side, the funny side, the challenging side, the marital problems that they had with James and Ellen White. It really brings to life the character of Ellen White. You know, too often people use Ellen White and say Ellen White said, and they use her as a stick to beat people with, but there's really a human side to her, and we really have to see her holistic life and holistic ministry as well. So I really appreciate you sharing from your expertise and your background and your research into her life. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And those of you who've been listening, thank you for joining us on the Lineage Journey podcast. We hope and pray that this has been a blessing to you and that it's helped you in your understanding of prophets and the gift of prophecy and how all those things interact and play a part. For more information, go to lineagejourney.com and you can find more research, more videos, and more articles there. Thank you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Lineage Journey is supported by your generous donations. Did you know that you can donate on a monthly basis? Any amount, from $2 to $100 or whatever you decide, through patreon.com/lineagejourney. Your donations go towards the cost of producing our varied content, and we thank you for your support.